Welcome to the Pittsburgh Dish. I'm your host, Doug Howlman. How do you turn food blogging into some true friendships? Our guest tells her story. What wine would you pair with fried chicken? Our resident wine expert surprises me with her choice. And what to do when nature gives you a bounty? How about make violet jelly? We'll hear a recipe from a certified Pennsylvania master naturalist. All that ahead, stay tuned. This week's show is supported by Chip and Kale Plant-Based Meals. You can find their current menu via their Instagram profile at Chip and Kale. If you'd like to advertise your food-centric business, just drop us a DM on Instagram or use our Get in Touch form on our website. That's www.pittsburghdish.com. Thank you. Now on to the show. Hey, thanks so much for coming over and coming onto the show. Would you introduce yourself and what you have going on in food?
Sure. So hi, my name is Raquel Holiday. I run an Instagram account called Fork Yeah, PGH. I think you could figure out what the pun on that one is. And I kind of got involved in the influencer and foodie community in Pittsburgh because I was someone who was constantly on my phone posting about food, and everyone was just like, Raquel, like, just create an account for it. And I was like, what's funny is that my backstory is like embarrassing, but very Pittsburgh centric. In high school, I had a fan page for a very popular dance TV show in Pittsburgh. I think everyone can kind of put which one that is together. And I built a following. I built a very large following. And I regret deleting that account every single day because it had a ton of followers. But I found the love for community building. And like when you're young and you're doing those types of things, then you become an adult and everyone tells you like, it's not okay to be like a big fan of things, but it really is. Like now I've just, you know, expanded that to food. And I think that's a little more expensive than a TV show. That's kind of like how I became who I am is by being such a fan of something like a reality TV show that you can then divulge into it being about a true passion of yours, which for me has brought me so many friends and a great internet community. And now I'm buddies with Doug.
So. If you have built a connections and community through a passion. And I think from what I've seen, you know, very smartly using social media to do that. You were one of the first people I met when I was invited to a restaurant that opened near my house, and they were trying to, you know, promote and kind of get going. And I really enjoyed this experience, but I had never done this before. And you were there. And you kind of like walked me through it. Like, yeah, if we like the food, we'll take some pictures.
You grew so much since then.
I think I've grown a little bit. Yeah. And then it just so happened that every time I went to a food-centric event like that, you have been there. I think I've seen you the most at those types of
meetups. I try to stay involved. And I think that that's like a big thing for me is like never forgetting that like, this is about the connections that you make. It is about supporting businesses and, you know, getting great photos, like obsession with my ring light, which we can talk about later. You know, I love that thing.
I know.
But I think for me, it really is just about like that community aspect and the ability to connect with not only other people with shared passions, which as an adult, it is hard to like meet and make friends. And I know that sounds so corny, like, oh my God, I'm an adult and I want to make friends. But it's true. Like it is something that's difficult. And I think that the internet does have the ability to bring us together in person.
Yes. I think that's what I love about it the most too. I will tell you a dirty little secret. The other thing I like about the meetups that we've been part of, everyone actually likes to eat. If there's food on the table, we all want it. There's none of this, oh, we're new and I don't know you, and so I may not take that last bite. No.
Oh, no. We're taking that last. Even at that first meetup, like I had never met you before. And I was like, no, like eat that. And then like I took something home and we were like, do we like take this home? And we were like, we take this home. That was a good one.
That was Kebab House in Carnegie. Yes, that's the first place. I think the wings were the unexpected thing. They were so crispy. Delicious.
And that they took us into the kitchen and it was superbly clean. Like everyone so thinks clean. About restaurant kitchens and you're scared.
They were so nice. And they had, I mean, this is a kebab house. So they had all these skewers of meats over the grill. It was impressive. probably one of my favorite.
That was places. Actually really good there. Mm-hmm. 10 out of 10 recommend. Kebab House, Carnegie, shout out.
I know. So Raquel, I know you're into another sort of meetup thing for food, and that is Yelp Elite, which I know about Yelp, but what can you tell me about Yelp Elite and how you got involved with that?
Yeah, Yelp Elite is actually something I just happened to stumble upon. I mean, I think the food blogging community is great for like positive highlights. You know, it really is a highlight reel social mm-hmm. media. Yelp, you can go in and be a little more honest mm-hmm. about like maybe something you might not like, something like that. Because like the goal as a food blogger is to highlight. It's not to necessarily deter anything from businesses. But on a preface like Yelp, it is. It mm-hmm. is more so for honest reviews. So mm-hmm. I think that's a big differentiator. So if you start posting on Yelp a lot, you will get a message from their community manager. What happens is that they offer a program called Yelp Elite Squad. It's basically a group of people who are Yelpers, who do a lot of reviews, who are involved in the community. And this is, by the way, like not just food bloggers. It's not just influencers. I'd probably say the amount of influencers involved in that program is maybe like 10 to 15%. The community manager will put together events. They will invite the Yelp Elite Squad. You have to get selected for the event. You have to apply for it. And then if you get selected, you get to come to the event. And these events can range anywhere from, you know, a new restaurant, a new bar, but also things like I came here and I got a facial like an hour ago.
Oh.
Thanks to Yelp Elite. And then also too.
Look great, by the way. I know thanks. We're audio only, but.
Am I glowing?
You are.
shout out Aesthetics by Kayla at Filler. You have that ability to build relationships with businesses, but without being an influencer. And I've realized mm-hmm. that one of the downfalls, but also perks of being an influencer is people treat you differently coming from a restaurant. So I've had different experiences with restaurants with Yelp than I have with food blogging. Okay. But I've noticed that people who are scared to maybe get into like a blogging landscape, whether that be for us, that's food blogging, but it mm-hmm. might be lifestyle, it might be whatever. I recommend like trying Yelp Elite. Mm. It is much less scary. It is much more approachable. I would 10 out of 10 recommend that experience to mm-hmm. literally anyone is to apply for Yelp Elite and just start posting reviews on Yelp in general. It helps the general public regardless.
Yeah. Yeah. And I could see it's pretty open to, like you said, maybe, you know, personal care, or maybe folks do a lot of traveling and there's hotels and that type of thing. So it really is stuff that we're kind of doing in our everyday lives. And it's a gateway into it if you enjoy it.
Yeah, it's been a really great experience. And I think it's something that a lot of people just aren't aware of is an availability. I had one of my best friends. He is not a food blogger, but he partakes in it as well. So you can kind of invite other people into the community. There's a lot of husband and wife duos, a lot of people you wouldn't necessarily run into in your normal circles. I've been introduced through Yelp.
You were saying earlier that you're using the internet in a way to meet real people in real life. Have you gained some, you know, real friendships through that?
Yeah, I really have. Not just through food blogging, but I embarrassingly like also I'm a giant Taylor Swift fan. So I've met a lot of really good people on the internet through various ways. I've met people through my food blogging, obviously, which has then introduced me to a book club with other food bloggers, but also other individuals that started off of people that we met off the internet and became an in-person book club, all the way to having like mutual friends of Taylor Swift and being a big like fangirl, I guess you could say. I understand that not everyone who listens to this is going to want to open a food blog, but they might have something that they're passionate about. Maybe it's running. Couldn't be me, but running or
that's not me either.
Yoga,
yeah.
Or a TV show that they like. Like, don't be afraid to just like talk about it online. Like, you'll be able to meet other people. Like, I'm literally going across the world with a friend that I met on the internet to meet another friend who lives across the world to go to a concert together. But in food blogging, you don't just meet someone and chit chat on the internet. You end up like going to an event and meeting one of them. I feel like the food blogging side is a little bit more of actually meeting the person in person. Like Doug, we met, like you said, at an event. So I think that it's one of those things that it builds that community. And I've made lifelong friendships from food blogging that then turned into like book clubs and then going to like a creator conference, like all those different types of things just coming from, you know, putting myself out there and posting silly little pictures of food on the internet. I now have like, I could name like 10 close friends that I've made because I decided to whip out a ring light in the middle of a restaurant one day.
I love it. I think the other advantage that we have in the arena that we have of food and going to restaurants is that we are physically sitting down together for a meal. And just the act of that really always brings people together anyway. We get to talk a little bit more. We spend some actual quality time together. And I have to say, when I haven't gone to an event like that for a while and I haven't seen you all, I miss you. Like, you know, it was nice. We just saw each other at a cheese event and I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. So it's nice to reconnect.
And it's also just one of those things that like, it pushes you outside your comfort zone. Like I work from home. Like it helps your social skills. Like you're put into a situation that can also help you like with a corporate career because you're having to get used to kind of talking to people who you have no idea about. You really only see them like online and you're like have to stir up a conversation and deal with this person for the next 2.5 hours because you're at an event together. So you have to like make it not awkward for yourself, but also not awkward for another person. And I still like commit myself to going to as many events as I can. I'm learning how to say no, but also trying to balance like the reasons why I'm here.
Yeah. I like what you said about really a way of networking, but honing your communication skills, your people skills, because so much of what we are doing is digital. So I do want to take a step back. Number one, you grew up in the local area, right?
Yeah, I live and I grew up in Beaver, PA. So whether you consider that local or not, that is up to you. I know Pittsburgh people are very specific.
Well, this is a regional food show. So we're going to include Beaver County.
Yay, thank
yeah,
you.
I want to, and ultimately I'd like to get out to all the surrounding counties. There's just so much.
The suburbs.
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I grew up in Armstrong County, so that's out there too. Tell me a little bit about your sort of food life growing up. Did folks cook for you? Did you cook at all growing up? What was that like for you?
It's so funny that I ended up being this like bougie. Like I consider my food brand a very like expensive taste. That's kind of what I tend to spotlight. Growing up, that like was not my life. Like it was, my mom didn't love cooking. Mm-hmm. Love you, mom, if you're listening to this, but not the best.
It's not the first time we've heard this from a guest.
I think that like, to me, pasta too, when I was growing up, was the most expensive, most extravagant restaurant I could possibly have. I grew up in a very like basic cooking family. Mm-hmm. Like I don't even recall my mom like cooking something that I'm like, wow, I remember that. Like maybe a lasagna every once in a while. Like, and that was like big deal.
Yeah.
I come from a very small family. Like it's just me and my parents. So there was never like the big Christmas dinner, like what you stereotypically think of, like, oh, that like big family holiday. Although my last name is Holiday, I didn't have the holidays from that side. But I remember going to college and my friend's like, have you ever tried sushi? And I'm like, no, why? And she was like, you need to try sushi. And I was like, okay, like I'll try sushi. And she's like, oh, try the California roll. And I was like, that doesn't sound that good. Like, let me just order something random. I tried like the most random, like she's like, I don't know if you're gonna like that. Like that's all raw. And I'm like, I'll try it. And I've ended up falling in love with that. And I was like, huh, wow. What other foods are there? And then my best friend Sam took me to Smallman Galley back when it was Smallman Galley for the very first time.
It used to be down in the Strip District. And the sister, which is Federal Galley, is still over on the north side.
Correct. When I was in college, he took me there and I was like, oh, this is cool. This is different. Like, and I think that's kind of where my taste buds erupted, was that like post-college like experience. Like, I'm not saying I had bad food growing up, but food wasn't like a part of my like
existence. It wasn't the fabric of the family.
It wasn't a personality trait. And my parents still to this day, like, do not go out to nice, super nice restaurants or anything. That's just not who they are. Like, my mom eats a well-done steak with ketchup.
Whoa, I got to just stop you. What do they think of what you're doing then?
They think it's wild.
Yeah.
They'll be like, oh, what'd you eat this time? And then I'm like, oh, I had some oysters. Like,
and they're like over the top. Like,
they can't
don't even
believe
know.
It. So like, I think that that's like the crazy part is that growing up, I was very surrounded by like very basic, like meat
simple
and potatoes,
food.
Simple foods, stuffed pork chops, which I have a new appreciation for pork chops.
Well, I
now,
do love
but like,
a good stuffed pork chop, but I love this idea though, that you hit sort of college, post-college, I think you just called it your taste Buds eruption, something like that. I think that's like, I want that as a hashtag now.
A taste buds eruption. Yeah. I think that like, I really had that like, maybe it was a taste bud awakening.
Awakening. Yeah, that's good.
I think for me, that was like definitely something as a young adult that I realized was something that piqued my interest. Like just having an experience with food. I've had good food before, but I'd never really had experiences. I want the elevated experience, but that doesn't mean that there isn't like food that I don't eat. Like this is going to either disgust or make me more relatable to more people. Like I eat Subway once a week. Like,
oh, that's no problem.
I used to have this thing. It was called like the cost to taste comparison where it's like, okay, this is 5 stars for what it was. And at one point in time when I was working at my old job, I considered Wendy's the 4 for $4 to be like the ultimate 5 out of 5 on the cost to like taste comparison scale. I think that they've definitely gone downhill since then.
Aww.
But there's been experiences that like, okay, this is expensive, but it's not worth it. So although the food tasted good, like the price didn't compare.
Yes.
Versus having like an experience where, okay, the food was good, but the price was...
It wasn't there. This is why I like knowing you. And actually you're leading into my next question. You've been doing this for how long has the Fork Yeah PGH been going on?
I guess September 2019.
So what are we coming with? 5 years. Congratulations. You've gone to enough places. You know that cost price comparison for the actual elevated experience is there. Could you share with me and our listeners one or two places that you have discovered and you truly enjoy because it actually hits all of those notes?
If I had to like specify a restaurant brand, it would be the RDG Group.
Oh, the Richard Deschamps Group?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think all their restaurants are spectacular, specifically Polite Blue. Like, please reopen. If anyone there is listening to this, please reopen. And I know that that is a popular brand, but here's the thing. They are consistent. They're good. And the fact that this restaurant has been closed for over a year and I still think about their French onion soup on a daily basis really says something.
This is Polite Blue in Lawrenceville.
Yes.
Near Morcia. And it is one of the Deschamps concepts. We should just list a couple others if folks aren't familiar. So Taco Downtown.
Correct.
Meat and Potatoes.
Gaijin. Sally Ann's.
Oh, thank you.
Coupe de Ville.
So going towards East Liberty, Fish Norfowl. Are we missing any? There's a new, like a golden place.
Golden Guy is going to be opening in East Liberty.
Yeah, in Bakery Square. And they also have Taco Torta there.
Yes, also very good. But overall, like Polite Blue, Gaijin are probably my top two restaurants. Since Polite Blue is not currently open, it would be Gaijin right now. In the non-Deschamps group, it would be Altius if you want a true like fine dining experience. But I also have some favorites out like my way that are definitely in the, like, I guess you would say like cheaper.
Oh, that's okay.
Like my favorite steak salad is at this restaurant called New Sheffield Cafe. It is on Broadhead Road in like the center township / Aliquippa-ish span. When I want a good steak salad, like I want like, you know, a load of salad and fries and steak.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me, like, is probably my favorite steak salad. It's New Sheffield Cafe out in Beaver County.
Mm, I love it. Raquel, I wanted to talk with you about an article that I read recently that it was from J. Kenji Lopez-Ault, and he's based in Seattle. And for folks that maybe don't know him, he's pretty well known in the food world. He was approached by someone opening a new restaurant, and they asked him to come and have a free meal and then post about it on social media. He did not have a favorable view of that type of marketing. I don't think he's in necessarily the right target audience to do that thing either. I would never approach someone of his level to do that. I'm sure that that's happened to you. And I'd love your take on how you feel about that. Some of the points he made, they should hire a social media manager, or that they're taking advantage of younger people that just want to get out there and get popular on their own social accounts. I have some different thoughts, but I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, and I'd love to hear yours too.
Sure.
Okay, so I definitely do have some opinions on that. First and foremost, it's one of those things where an organization needs to know their market. Mm-hmm. So it depends who you're contacting. Like someone like me will always do something for free, but also too, if I was larger, I would still do it if it was a smaller business or something like that. But I think his opinion on that is completely wrong in terms of like hiring a social media person. Like, it is no secret that influencer marketing is the number one marketing way in like the entire country right now. Like, you hear about like the insane multi-million follower Instagram gurus who are making like 200K a post. Like, there is something there.
Yeah.
Now, do I wish that I could get paid when I go to a restaurant and eat dinner? Yeah, I don't think anyone would like turn down the opportunity to get paid. However, I don't expect it. It's not something that's like on my radar. I personally don't even have a rate card. I probably should, but
yeah, I created some rates, but I don't really push them.
Exactly. Now, it's different if it was like a giant chain. Yeah. Like, for example, if McDonald's wanted to reach out to me.
Yeah. You know, they have money to do that.
I know they have the money to do that.
Yeah.
I would never expect that from like a small restaurant.
Yeah. A small, independent, local place. I think what we talked about earlier, and that's where I am, just to answer your question. I want to help local independent businesses succeed. And the other thing that we talked about earlier is it's a social outlet as well to see folks like you. So I feel like I'm getting some benefits out of being included.
And then it becomes a networking opportunity for me.
Yeah.
So I get more payoff that way. Also too, like, it's okay just to do things or views or because you like it.
Yeah.
Nor do you have to accept every single offering. I've had to say no if it just isn't justifiable for how far I had to drive. But I made this account to spotlight small businesses. And whether it be that I had 5 followers or 500,000 followers, I would still do local.
We've gotten invited to like a dinner that's like gifts in kind. Like, we can go and we can enjoy a nice dinner and they would like us to do some social posts.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Is whenever a business, and this is advice for any business owner out there, if you want to start engaging with influencers, rather than being like, can you post this, that, the other, and give you like metrics, I would suggest that a business instead offer it to a smaller group. You do not have to offer it to everyone because that's actually oversaturation. And like, I can tell when it's the same.
You know, Alex Goodstein and I talked about this a little too much, like overexposure.
Right.
Yeah. So keep it smaller.
Keep it smaller. And then just say, hey, if you enjoy your meal today, please feel free to share it and tag us.
Yeah.
I think that that's enough. It also gives creative freedom. People will get more authentic content that way. And I think that the businesses will get a better return on investment there. Good little ROI. And I actually had very good success. Unfortunately, Papa Joe's wine cellar is only a wine cellar now, but I helped them coordinate an event. And people still come up to me and be like, that was a really great event. And it's because I talked to them ahead of time. I created a good game plan. And I was just like, hey, like, let's just invite people. And like, if they want to share it, they share it. If they don't, they don't. Mm-hmm. Every single person who walked in that room shared a something. Post.
And remind me, where is Papa Joe's wine cellar?
So they used to be in Lawrenceville. Okay. It used to be like an Italian restaurant. Now they are just a wine cellar in Zelianople.
Okay.
Papa Joe is so nice.
We got to give him a shout out. You reminded me of something. I do have a little spicy question.
Ooh.
Have you ever been invited to have a, you know, some type of comped meal and they would like you to do a social post, but the meal wasn't good?
I did have an experience where I was invited to a restaurant. Something with the experience didn't go great. And after the fact, I was just like, do you know what? Like, I don't feel comfortable posting.
Right.
Now, that's one of the nice benefits of doing things for like free meals instead of paid. If this was a paid agreement here, like,
yeah,
I probably would have had to post it. But yeah. I messaged them and was just like, I don't feel comfortable posting this.
Your feedback was probably more important in that moment than any kind of social post you would have done anyway.
Exactly. So I think that that was like telling for them. And it also keeps my content authentic.
Authentic. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
So Raquel, I know you've been doing this for a little bit now. And the last time I was with you, you have an awesome ring light, which I actually took advantage of because it was a little dark where we were eating. How have you sort of built your confidence around, you know, getting the great shot and doing some of those things in public sometimes where, I, as I like to say, the phone eats first to take a picture?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think you really just have to like step up and do it. Mm-hmm. And just realize that like, even if other people at other tables stare at you, like the people who are judging you the most are actually the people who like are probably the ones on Instagram scrolling like, oh my God, that looks so good. Like, that's why I'm here. So like that to me, like I'm not afraid to be embarrassed. Like I have stood on chairs. Like obviously there's a time and place for everything. Like,
yeah, we understand that.
I think that that is like just a skill maybe I just have. Like other people might be afraid to do that. But like honestly, like not that many people look. I have full confidence in that ability.
So Raquel, you're going on 5 years with your food blogging. Are there any things you want to accomplish? Any new goals coming up for you?
Yeah, I think for me, it's interesting that you asked because I'm currently balancing my username. Mm-hmm. I love my username. I think it's funny.
Yes.
But it puts me in a bucket of only food and only Pittsburgh. And if you want to expand outside of a certain market, like you kind of have to do a little bit more. I would like to expand into like more experiences because I also don't want to put myself in a box. I've started to realize that my friends only call me to go out to eat. Like I love food, but like, let's also go play mini golf, like from that side. And I think for me, like I do want to expand more into like experiences and lifestyle a little bit more.
And so the rub is Fork. Yeah. PGH is, it's sounding a little too food centric. And so you're maybe considering a rebranding of that.
I'm considering either like a rebrand or just dealing with it. Like people could deal with it with the username.
Yeah.
Because I do love it. And that's something I balance. I mean, maybe like sound off in the comments, people who are listening to this. Like if you think that you, would you stop following someone if they stop posting like what was in their username? Mm. But also too, I think it is just something maybe to slowly introduce it and people will get used to it. But I also don't want people to feel like, oh, I only followed her for this. So it's a double-edged sword when you're trying to think like there's how much is encompassed in a name? Like what's in a name? Yeah. There's a lot. Like it is your brand. This year, I'm hoping to expand a little bit into new aspects. And also, as much as I don't want to, I'm going to try to focus on doing more reels. And I don't want to like lose the love out of doing this. Like I'll do a reel, of course, like if it makes sense for what I'm eating. Like if there's some flaming cheese, like, yeah, that's a video. But like to me, like I don't want to lose sight of the things that I enjoy in this just because it's going to get me more followers. Mm-hmm. Like I've made conscious decisions in the past. Like I could have probably expanded into more followers than I have.
But that's not the goal.
But that's not my, like, would I love to sit here and say that I have like 50,000 followers? Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't? But to me, that's not the goal. I think that for me, it's about still enjoying my experience. Every time I post a reel, it's kind of like a stressful event. And I don't want to lose the fun, but also balance it with knowing what you have to do to market yourself. Mm-hmm. And like, if it's what's going to bring a small business more business is going to be a reel, like, I don't know. It's one of those things that I'm looking to grow on this year and maybe I'll take like a class. I don't know.
And I kind of get it. And, you know, you said earlier too, you want to put things out that still keep you authentic with the account and whether that's different topics or different types of posts like reels, I think it's all great stuff to consider.
Maybe that's a way I can challenge myself this year is that I can expand mm-hmm. in my content type. And also to expand in the different varieties of mediums that I am putting out there.
I love it. Raquel, I always like to give you a moment to plug, again, your account or accounts everywhere people can find you. Would you remind us again?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram. That is my main food blog. And that is Fork Yeah PGH.
And that is FORKYAPGH.
And for all inquiries, you can email forkyapgh@gmail.com.
I love it. I always like to ask everyone a final question.
Sure.
The name of the show is The Pittsburgh Dish. Mm-hmm. You're a food blogger. What's been the best dish you've eaten this week?
Oh my gosh, this week? Sorry, you threw that one on me. Okay, so in true Beaver County girl situations, there's a restaurant in my town and it is called Biba.
Biba.
B-I-B-A. It is Latin American fusion. Mm. And I had a great meal there. I had some scallops, a salad. They have some house-made focaccia. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You mean focaccia?
Yeah.
I think that's how I would say it.
Okay. But they had some stellar desserts. And I'm actually not a dessert girl. I'm actually a appetizer. Like, if you're going to tell me, like, you can order an appetizer or a dessert, I'll usually pick the appetizer. But they had this almond creme brulee and a banana bread cake.
Oh, my gosh. Raquel is showing me pictures right now on her phone, and it looks amazing.
And it was, like, not too sweet. And both of those were so good. And, like, I'm glad that we got both because it was the perfect balance of this super heavy, like, banana bread cake that had this, like, dark, I think it was, like, a caramel. I don't know. Anyways, it was phenomenal. And then the, like, light creme brulee with, like, the toasted almonds. Oh,
best dishes so you've eaten this week.
Good. Best thing I've ate this week.
And so, again, that's
by far
Biba.
Biba in Beaver.
I love it. Raquel, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. I appreciate it, Doug.
Will you come back and give us a couple more restaurant recommendations?
Of course.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Of course.
Up next in our weekly recommend, what wine would you pair with fried chicken? A couple weeks back, we talked with Shayla Penn, and she's been on the hunt for some of the best fried chicken places. So I thought it would be great to throw that challenge to Catherine, our resident wine expert, and see what wine she would pick for some great fried chicken. Let's hear what she has to say. Hey, Catherine, thanks for stopping back over. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking to Shayla Penn, and you gave a recommendation for one dish that she had. But something else that was on my mind is Shayla does these roundups for Star 100.7, and she was doing one recently for fried chicken. She was trying to find some of the best fried chicken places. And I always love to throw you the bone of a challenge. I started thinking, well, I wonder what wines would pair with fried chicken. And I know that might be a big range because you can kind of do fried chicken in some different ways. But if I were to give you that task, what do you think?
Doug, if you're making fried chicken, I'm bringing champagne.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
So let's think about that. Mm. When you're making fried chicken, how do you make fried chicken?
I mean, it's fried.
It's fried. Oh. You've got it dredged and breading, and you drop it in the oil, and it comes out, and it's crunchy, and especially if you're biting into a leg, and you've got that dark meat in there, and it's really rich. I mean, how does that feel in your mouth?
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. And you know what? You are reminding me of another time that you and I cooked. Actually, we baked a cake together that was super rich, and you brought champagne for that, and the mouthfeel was great. And I realize probably where you're going with this.
Okay.
Something that's like sort of high fat and champagne, like it's a good pairing, right?
It is. So when you're thinking about biting into that chicken leg, that first bite, isn't that always the best bite?
Absolutely.
So if you're pairing it with champagne, you can experience that first bite every bite.
Oh. Is it because it's cleansing the palate in a way?
Bingo.
Oh.
Absolutely. So champagne, a dry champagne, is going to have really bright acidity. It's going to be low in sugar. Mm. You're going to have some, because of the fattiness in your mouth when you sip the champagne.
Yes.
That's going to enable you to taste a lot of the fruit flavors coming off of the champagne.
Mm.
And then the acid's going to take that fattiness away from your mouth.
Right.
So the next bite that you go in for on the chicken, it's going to taste as good as the first bite.
My mind is blown, but I am loving this. Champagne and fried chicken.
Champagne and fried chicken. The drier the champagne, the better.
I love it. Catherine, thank you so much.
You're most welcome.
Catherine Montest is a local certified wine expert. You can find more about Catherine on her website at yourfairywinemother.com. This week's recipe is provided by listener Yvonne D., who is a certified Pennsylvania master naturalist. The recipe is for her violet jelly, and she does emphasize in our chat, you've got to get violets from a trusted source, no chemicals, no pesticides. Yvonne wrote a beautiful blog post that you can find on our website. Let's give her a call and learn a little bit more about this recipe.
Good morning.
Good morning. Is this Yvonne?
How are you?
I'm good.
It is.
Oh.
Nice to talk to you this morning.
Oh my gosh. So great to talk with you as well.
So I love to cook. I really love to bake too. But so I bought this one cookbook and it's for bees in me.
Mm.
And in it was a recipe for the violet jelly. And in our yard, being someone who is very conscientious about what's happening in our world, there are no pesticides or anything, any chemicals, fertilizers, herbicides right. used in my yard. Mm. Now, around me, a lot of my neighbors do. So I have to be very careful where I pick my violets. And mm-hmm. usually it's my backyard because I know behind my backyard is a farm. Mm. And they don't even use it. You know, it just grows.
It's just the land.
So I feel very comfortable about picking anything in my backyard. I found this recipe and I thought, oh, I'm going to make some of that. And I picked a quart of violets. It takes about an hour, but the violets are growing everywhere. The sun is beaming down and you could see the dew on the grass and the birds are singing all their bird songs. Oh. And the bees are out. They're, you know, they're looking for nectar and they're just, and I'm with them
yes.
and they are not bothering me. I'm just picking away and they're doing their thing. And so this began, and I can't even tell you, it's probably more than 15 years that I've been making this violet jelly. I love to give it to friends around Mother's Day.
Yes.
Because it's so pretty.
It's got a beautiful pinkish fuchsia kind of look to it. It's like the perfect looking gift.
Yeah. So what happens is when you pick these flowers, I usually rinse them off mm-hmm. and then you pour boiling water on top of them and you let that set for 24 hours and the colors of the flowers seep. Mm. They steep like a tea. And then when you strain the violets, which will go into my compost, you will add lemon juice. Mm. And the lemon juice helps change the pigment. And sometimes it's a deep fuchsia. Sometimes it's a pink. Mm. It's always interesting to see what color going to turn out.
It's nature.
It's usually like a pink.
Yeah. It's going to always be a little different.
Yeah. And it's my younger son. It's one of his favorite jellies that I make. Mm. So we are planning on going to visit. So I need to make him some.
I love this. Yvonne, if folks haven't had a chance to look at the recipe, I know you say you want, was it about a quart of violets? Is that right?
Yes.
And are the violets in your quart jar, are they sort of tamped down or just sort of loosely filled?
Loosely filled.
Okay, great.
Now, when I rinse them, they will drop down.
Sure. Okay. So I'm going to pick a quart loose in a safe field that I trust. And then
yes.
I won't have quite that much once I actually rinse them off and steep the tea. But that's what someone's going for if they're going to do this recipe.
That's correct.
Okay. It just sounds lovely. And I really appreciate not only the idea of the gift, but in your blog post, you wrote about how you pair it with a couple of other items. It's like the perfect Mother's Day gift or hostess gift. I just think it's amazing.
There is a great Victorian white cake, and it's you can make this any way you want. If you wanted to buy a package white cake, you put the violet jelly as a filling.
Oh, my.
You cut that cake open, spread the violet jelly, and then take confectionery sugar and sprinkle that over the top. And that makes a beautiful dessert when you're having friends, or even if you want to make it for someone special. It's really good.
That is amazing. Yvonne, thank you so much for this recipe and so timely for this time of year.
Thank you, Doug. It's been my pleasure. I appreciate it. It's a joy to talk to you.
Oh, you as well. Thanks again. That's our show for this week. We want to thank all of our guests and contributors, and to Kevin Selecki of Carnegie Accordion Company for providing the music to our show. We'll be back again next week with another fresh episode. Stay tuned.